Today on The Family Vacationer, I welcome back Jennifer Allen of Wonders Within Reach to talk about families traveling with accessibility issues. Episode 153 starts right now.
Welcome to The Family Vacationer with Rob and Danny.
Rob and Danny.
The go-to podcast for families on the move.
Welcome back, folks, to another exciting episode of the Family Vacationer podcast, your go-to destination for all things family travel. I'm Rob, and today we welcome back a very special guest. Jennifer Allen is the creator of the Wonders Within Reach blog, and she's here to share her invaluable insights on a topic that's close to many of our hearts, and that's making family travel accessible to all. Now, if you followed Jennifer at all, you know that she's a seasoned traveler with a passion for exploring the world with her family. But what sets Jennifer apart is her dedication to ensuring that other families of all abilities can experience the joys of travel without limitations. Today, Jennifer is going to be shedding light on some of the questions that families with accessibility concerns need to consider when they're planning their vacations, what to look for as it relates to transportation and lodging, and what to consider when you're looking at different destinations and experiences. So stay tuned as we delve into this important conversation. Get ready to be inspired, informed, and hopefully empowered with the knowledge that you need to embark on an unforgettable family adventure, regardless of your family's unique needs. You're listening to the Family Vacationer Podcast. We'll be right back after a short break with Jennifer Allen. When we go on vacation, there's nothing worse than a chaotic trip with our boys to the airport restroom. Trying to get in and out in a timely manner, making sure they don't touch anything, lifting them up to wash their hands without getting water all over them and the restroom, it can be stressful to say the least. Thankfully, this struggle is now a thing of the past with the help of Step and Wash. Step and Wash is the step stool that's been helping children like mine and people with disabilities safely and independently wash their hands in public restrooms, especially airports. Step and Wash is in over 100 airports helping people of all heights wash their hands while they're on the go. Step and Wash believes hand washing should be made accessible to everyone, regardless of their height or physical ability. My family is thankful for Step and Wash because it allows my boys to wash their hands without my help, but I also love knowing it's available for others who may not always be able to safely and independently wash their hands when they're traveling. Step and Wash can also be found in more than 20,000 facilities worldwide, including favorites like Target, Olive Garden, and Home Depot. If you'd like to see Step and Wash near you, let us know at stepandwash.com/share. That's stepandwash.com/share. Without further ado, let's dive into this enlightening conversation with Jennifer. Let's make family travel dreams a reality for everyone. Jennifer, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Good to be back.
I'm glad to have you back. So, you know, your first time on the show, it was eye-opening for me. Having a family where we don't have to deal with physical challenges, it's amazing the things that we didn't think about and didn't consider. So it was great to have you on. And just I look at things a lot differently now, even as a travel agent, when I've dealt with families who, you know, do have those physical challenges. It's eye-opening to see what those families go through. So let's talk about some things, and maybe that this will help at least start a conversation with families. So let's start with accommodations. You've booked a hotel. How do you know? What are some questions that you need to ask so that you know that your chosen accommodations are accessible and accommodating for all of your family members?
Well, first I'm going to rewind a step before that and say, don't book the hotel until you know.
Right. For sure. For sure.
You would be actually, how many accommodations don't have accessible options? So obviously, newer hotels, bigger chains, all have been built with ADA in mind. And so there's usually something that is mostly accommodating. But there are a lot of lodges or Airbnbs or bed and breakfast or just older hotels that don't have that. So you can't just book a boutique hotel and expect that it's going to be accessible unless it's a chain that you're familiar with or it's a newer building. Don't even book it until you know. Obviously, the first way to know is by going on the website, but there's so little information. Often when you're booking a hotel, you know, it will say they have an accessible room, but it doesn't say anything about what that means.
Right.
So a couple of options here. The first, and actually, this is something that we might come back to a lot as we talk about things you need to keep in mind when you're planning accessible travel. There are resources available that can help you. So the first is knowing what those are and how to use them. There are people who are available that can help you. And then there are the travelers that have gone before you. So there is a resource called Wheel the World.
Okay.
And they have not canvassed the entire world, unfortunately. If they did, this would be really easy. But everywhere that they have canvassed, they actually go into the hotels and they measure door frames and check the height of light switches, measure under the bed, check the width of shower. I mean, anything that you could possibly need in the world of accessibility, they're going in and they're canvassing hotels and attractions in different locations and will mark exactly what is available. So if it's somewhere that they've been there, you can book a hotel through them and it's not an extra fee. It just guarantees you an accessible room with whatever it is that you need.
Sure.
There is a newer platform that's similar for rental properties. It's called Rentable. But there's not, again, it's not everywhere, right?
Right.
So you can use these in the places that they have them, but it's not all over the place. Airbnb now actually has fantastic filters for accessibility. So in addition to just wheelchair accessible, we've had that nightmare on other platforms where we stay in a home and then we get there and like, oh, about this aspect. But they have check boxes. So you can check off what exactly you're looking for in accessibility. And then they have photos. So if they have said that they have a roll-in shower, they have a photo of their roll-in shower. So you can see if it has a lip or if it doesn't and make sure it meets your needs.
Right.
But going back to just a regular hotel that's maybe not in one of those locations, you have to pick up the telephone.
Gotcha. And then I guess it's specific to what you're dealing with, but what questions do you ask when you get the hotel?
Right. That is very specific to each individual. So a lot of people who are traveling with wheelchairs are looking for space under the bed so that they can have that Hoyer lift to get into bed.
Okay.
That's not something that we need. So that's not something we ask for. Similar with shower or tub. A lot of people are looking for the roll-in shower. We actually prefer an accessible tub. It's easier. Our son is 7. So he's just at the age where, you know, tubs are easier for him to function in. So that's what we call it.
Yeah.
But we could use either, but if we're looking for our preference, different things that we look for. I'm trying to think what else comes to mind. ADA will cover the basics. So if they're posting that they have an ADA room, you do know that the door is going to be wide enough to get a wheelchair through, and the space layout of the room should be wide enough to navigate a wheelchair.
Okay. Now, you mentioned those platforms. Do they review transportation options as far as cities go? Like, how do you deal with public transportation? Or just as simple as, you know, let's say you want to call an Uber. Like, what are the considerations for that when it comes to transportation?
Sure. And this varies a lot by where you travel. None of the resources I mentioned before cover transportation, but there are some other things that do. There's an app called City Mapper. They have the ability to sort transportation by accessibility. So they can map your route and it will include buses or metro or taxis or walkable spaces, whatever. It will give you the most efficient route based off of your filters that you're putting in. So you can put in accessibility and it will only send you on the things that are accessible.
Okay.
That is brilliant. But again, it's only in big cities, so it's not available everywhere. Uber and Lyft have wheelchair accessible options, but also not everywhere. We have been in places before, and unfortunately it still shows up on the app. So we'll put in a request for a wheelchair accessible van, and then it spins and spins and says looking for a driver. And then you wait 10 minutes and it says, we're still looking. Would you like to wait? Right. So some places just don't have them, or they have one in the city and it's being used by someone, or they're not working that day or whatever, and so it's not coming up. With that, I think the first step is to know which type of transportation you're looking for. So if you're doing public transportation and that's how you're planning to get around, that would be a first step of research to look up accessible transportation in that destination. So for example, in New York City, they have, this has gone up since I was there, it was 66, I believe, accessible metro stations in the entire city. But that was a while ago. And I know that they are working towards by 2055, having all of them accessible, but they do have an accessibility map. So it's not available at every station. It's something that you need to look up ahead of time so that you have it. You can pick it up in the city, but you need to be in a station that has it. So you need to know before you go. And that way you can map your route. So you see what stations are accessible and which are not. Downside of that is always the chance that, you know, if there's an elevator out, it's not updated on a paper printout, but if you're on the computer or you're using it on your phone, you can usually see that everything is functioning if someone reports it. Sorry, I kind of lost myself here. So public transportation, right, looking up ahead of time, making sure that you get the accessibility map if you're doing public transportation. Most places now, the bus routes are pretty accessible, but those two, there are usually routes that you can get maps ahead of time that will show you where you can get on and where you can get off. Some places, even though they have all accessible running buses, it depends on the stop. So depending on the placement with the curb, if they're not lined up to the curb, you can't get off even though the bus is accessible. So just looking up those maps ahead of time. If you're not doing public transportation, I mean, a rental vehicle is often the easiest option, but it is more expensive to get an accessible moment. But that's often the easiest way to go. We are fortunate in that when we take our own vehicle, we can drive a lot of places and we can fit our own chair because it's what we're used to using to get. I'm not really sure with Uber and Lyft how to plan better for accessibility, because a lot of those places you can research ahead of time and they have accessible options, but then when you're there, it's really an issue of availability.
You're at the mercy of how many drivers they have with those kind of vehicles. For example, in the small town that I live in, getting an Uber of any kind is difficult because there's not that many people that drive for Uber. So I'm sure it just depends on the size of the town, and you're again at the mercy of who they have driving at the moment you need it.
We have overall switched from using the metro station in a lot of places to just doing the bus when we're doing public transportation. Most places have accessible bus routes, I mean, consistently.
Yeah.
As opposed to the metro, you know, it's so hit or miss depending on where you are that it just hasn't been worth it. And we end up losing so much time. Even if we've researched sometimes and we've mapped out the routes, you know, you get there and an elevator is down. It's, as opposed to buses are most often accessible. Again, not everywhere, but usually the bus routes are easy.
When we talked before, you mentioned, I think it was a museum where you had called ahead of time, asked if they were accessible, and they said yes. And then you got there and it was, I think, a 3-story museum. And they did have the curb where you could get in, but then no elevator. So when you're dealing with attractions and activities of any kind, what kinds of things are you looking for when you're researching activities and attractions?
A lot of it is knowledgeability. I mean, I don't remember if I mentioned this the last time we talked. There was also a bookstore that I had contacted to see if they were accessible. And they said that they were, and I think they believed that they were. But then because I was prying, asking about questions because it was 2 floors. Right. And I had asked, is there an elevator to the second floor? Oh, well, no. So I guess you wouldn't be able to do the second floor, right? Just the first. Okay. And the coffee shop that is adjoined, can we access that? Oh, yeah, that's no problem. There's no barrier between the coffee shop and the bookshop. And then I asked specifically, are there steps to enter the building? Oh, yeah, there are 5 steps to get in. So I guess you can't get into the building at all.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I can't judge because, again, until we had the conversation with you that first time, I had never considered any of it. It is just the knowledge of what families like yours go through. So,
right. The easiest starting place for almost everywhere is the Plan Your Visit tab on the website. If they have accessibility information, it will be correct and it will be there. If it's not there, then you're back to the mercy of whoever answers the phone, how much information they can give you. This actually has been huge for us, especially when we were first starting, looking at disability travel bloggers and places where they have already gone and they have their post up with their pictures and what they did that was accessible. And you know, because you see them with their wheelchair doing these things. And so you know that those things are available to you. I've also started at the end of the year doing accessible travel awards. So things that stood out to us as easy places to take your family where you're not stressed about what you can and cannot do because everything is open to you.
Yeah.
So looking for things like that where, okay, what is maybe an easier trip to start with?
And then when we're talking about dining, because we always seem to gravitate to back towards food at some point.
Of course, that's why we travel, isn't it?
Well, it's part of it for sure. But are there, and you guys may not deal with this as far as dietary requirements, but maybe you could still speak to you know, what wording families need to look for when they are researching online?
That obviously varies by what the dietary need is. There has been a lot of growth in what's available, which is fantastic. So if you're looking for gluten-free, I mean, the options that are available now, as opposed to, I mean, even 5 years ago, it's phenomenal. I follow someone on Instagram who is in Italy right now, which you think of as a gluten nightmare, right? Everything is bread and pasta, but she's sharing her journey doing gluten-free through Italy and finding so many great options where she's able to get gluten-free pasta and gluten-free bread and all of the things. So searching your specific need, I think actually before searching a restaurant, canvassing the area. So looking for, I'm in Elizabethtown, gluten-free Elizabethtown, right? Instead of searching each individual restaurant. If you look up the restaurants first, I think it's going to be harder to find things on individual menus. And then if you find something and you're not sure of what it has, I feel like this is a terrible thing that I keep coming back to with disability travel, but it often does require that extra touch point.
Yeah.
Where you need to call somebody and you need to make sure, because there's not enough information that is put out there. And that is something that a lot of people are working on and trying to get more information available online, because disability families often won't go places because the information is not available. And it's just exhausting, right? You don't want to call 20 places for your vacation that you're trying to map out. It's too much. So
I can see people just trying to plan this and just throwing their hands up and going, you know what? It's just not even worth it. So that's, if we can give them just a modicum of encouragement that, hey, you can do this. It is still worth it. Along those lines, I don't know if you do this. You would think when you book a hotel room, with the modifications that you need, it would set off a bell at the hotel where they would know, oh, we've got guests come in that have these requirements. I don't think that always happens. Do you go that extra step to call the hotel and let them know what your needs might be? Have you ever done that? And if so, does it work? Do they tend to honor those needs?
So first of all, I'm terrible at this. And a lot of that is personality. I'm not the type of person who likes to ask for extra things. You know, if I don't want pickles on my burger, I will order the burger as is and pull them off when it comes.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. I feel like it's in the way, making extra hassle. And especially in hospitality, it really isn't. This is their job, right? They want to be able to welcome you the best that they can. And I have learned through time that there are a lot of things that you can ask for. Something I learned along the way, did you know that you can usually get bed protection? If you're staying in a bed and you're worried about a bedwetter, often hotels will have things available that you can cover your bed before you put your sheets on, or they can make it that way for you before you come so that the bed is ready. Or activities for kids, or, you know, we think about all the little toiletry things that get left behind, but they have a lot more than that that's often available. I'm not great about asking ahead of time, which means often we come into surprises.
Sure.
And if you're booking an accessible room, again, sometimes they don't have a lot of options for what that means. So I know I listened to a visually impaired man sharing about his accessible room that he booked for his visual impairment. And he did communicate that in the booking process, but he was given an ADA room. So it has the roll-in shower. He said for him, it's worse because he doesn't know where the shower begins.
Oh, right.
So there are little things that were designed for wheelchair accessibility, but when he gets in there, it doesn't help him at all.
Yeah. Goodness.
Right. And then all the switches are lower, but if he didn't realize it was not designed for visually impaired, so he didn't know where the switches were because they weren't at wall height where they typically would be.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's so, I'm curious about, you know, you mentioned ADA requirements for hotels. That seems like a very broad set of requirements where.
Yeah, absolutely. It was designed as a bare minimum.
Yeah, the specificity of each family, it might not meet those needs. And so that's why I was wondering if, you know, calling ahead, if that, but again, you know, I also wonder, is that asking more from the person picking up the phone than they were trained to do?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm curious how this actually plays out.
We've often had more success once we are there in person.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of times on the phone, it's easy for people to, I don't want to say smile and nod because you can't see them smiling and nodding, but the same idea, right? Where they're just giving you answers. Oh, sure, we can do that. Oh, sure. And then you get there and They didn't even pass the
Not so much.
nothing has been done. As opposed to once you get there and they can see you and what your family looks like, and you're saying we need a wheelchair accessible room, then more light bulbs go on. Oh, okay, they're looking for this type of room. This is what we need to give them. I know before I have booked accessible rooms and then shown up, and again, the elevator is out, right? And the accessible room is up however many flights of stairs. And they say, oh, we'll just, like, we gave you the accessible room, but you can't get to it. And then when we
can't get to it, right?
Ground floor room, it was an ordeal of, well, then we have to rearrange these people. And, you know, we have so many coming in and checking in, right? But the accessible room you booked us, we can't get to.
Yeah. Thanks for nothing. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But that too, I think if we had not been in person, would have been harder to negotiate. And we were there and they could see us. It's going to be really hard to carry him up four flights of stairs. So we were able to work that out. I mean, she made it clear that it was a hassle, but she did work it out so that we were able to have a ground floor room.
Oh my
And
goodness.
Then, and he was sacrificing the ADA. So it was not an accessible room, but again, because he's younger, his chair is smaller. So it's able to fit in tighter spaces. And even with bathing, he's young enough that we can help him with things. So
I'm curious about travel insurance. When you guys go on a trip, are there any extra considerations that you have to take into account when you are buying travel insurance?
That is a very good question, and it varies vastly. So the first step in that is to know what your own insurance does and does not cover. We actually have purchased travel insurance in the past that we didn't need because we didn't realize how much our insurance would have covered in that situation anyhow. So our insurance is pretty good in that if we have an emergency while we're traveling, it's covered. So we're not getting checkups while we're in Europe, right? We're not.
Right.
The only thing actually that we do is we do intensive physical therapy sessions, which are out of state because that's the only place we can get them. But otherwise, if you're seeking medical care on vacation, it's an emergency, right? So for us, that's actually covered. And we didn't realize that. Insurance-wise, disability doesn't usually count as a pre-existing condition when you're looking for travel insurance. But again, it depends on the travel insurance policy. So there is a whole lot of fine print that goes in on both sides of knowing what your actual insurance at home will cover versus what the travel insurance covers. Usually, there aren't any extra considerations if you get the travel insurance in a reasonable time frame of when you're traveling.
I had one specific instance pop up in my head, and maybe this has never happened to you guys, but let's say there was some issue with the wheelchair getting off of a plane and it causes you to miss your connecting flight, you know, which is not the fault necessarily of the airline.
Some more like trip insurance and actual medical insurance.
Exactly. Yes. Because a lot of these packages now cover both medical needs and then obviously, you know, from missing your connecting flight to losing the airline, losing your baggage, or, you know, let's say they lose some of your equipment that you might need.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how that works out.
I'm curious in your story, the airline didn't cover them getting a new flight when it was their fault if they couldn't get a chair off the plane.
You know, I actually had that story told to me like second or third hand. So I'm not sure how it worked out, but I was just curious if that would call, you would think that they would, like you would, I always try to believe in human decency.
Yeah.
And unfortunately I am disappointed more than I'm not. So
it's hard because it's not just human decency. It's corporate decency, right? So if you're flying a major airline, even if the individual wants to help you, sometimes they can't. I know we've had customer service things happen like that, where someone is telling you, okay, we can't help you. I had a connecting flight where I was flying north. They flew me south so that I could get the connection flight to go north. I don't know, one of those weird things, right? And then when I got south, the second flight was canceled. And so I said, well, can we just refund it and I'll book a new flight? Well, we can't refund it because you already took part of the flight. Yes, but you flew me away from my destination because of your flight changes.
So you're actually further away than you were when you started. That makes no sense.
Yeah, I was by a lot.
Oh my goodness.
But it's policy and, you know, they can't do anything with that. So, but trip insurance, no. Trip insurance does sound wiser than necessarily medical insurance. We also have travel credit cards that will include that.
For my final question, And I know that we've spoken offline and you've said that you're not a confrontational person, but if you've had a bad experience, are there ways for families to provide feedback to the travel industry? A company, it seems like if you were to call and say, you know, this happened and this happened, and they're immediately thinking you're wanting money back. And that may be the case, but you may also just be trying to let them know, hey, look, we have these issues. We know we're not alone. You're not servicing us. Are there constructive ways for families to provide that feedback? And the thing that I worry about is a family, like we mentioned, you know, it's been such an undertaking to plan this trip. They go on it, you know, they say, you know, we're going to try it, and it goes badly.
There are, and as much as with everything else, I've pushed the phone call, I think in this instance, I might actually go with writing, because I think for myself, maybe because I'm a writer, I'm able to better communicate that way, so I can list out, here are the things that happened without me getting fired up or uncomfortable or feeling like I'm putting too much on them. I can write it out ahead of time. Also, that paper trail is important, right? If you call someone and they're not management or they don't have power to make a difference, what are the chances that that message is going to make it anywhere? And I know I had mentioned this with you before. In dealing with those situations, yes, I am not confrontational, but you also have to think about, it's not just about you and your experience, right? It's about everyone else who follows after you forever until somebody says something. So if you're not willing to be uncomfortable and to say something, it is going to happen again, because there's no, they don't know that they did poorly. They don't know that they need to change. And I think that that is a big part of it, right? They're not trying to harm you. They didn't try to mess up your trip, but if you don't tell them, they don't know how to improve. And so it's going to continue to happen. So I think just giving that spark of motivation, it's not just about you. And I know for myself, I'm always reminding myself with so many things that it's for my son, right? It's not for me. I need to make the world more accessible so that when he's navigating it on his own, he's able to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your blog. Let's talk about Wonders Within Reach. Tell our listeners what you guys do. It's such an awesome resource for families that are dealing with these kind of issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the things that you brought up when we started traveling, we had no idea. And being able to find the resources was super overwhelming. So we kind of started the travel blog to share our journeys as we go, so that other people don't have to learn from their own mistakes. They can learn from ours because we make plenty.
Right.
So it also has become a resource where we are listing locations that are accessible. And we kind of have the extra family niche, right? So things that are aimed at kids and families that are wheelchair accessible locations or destinations.
Right.
Yeah, so the blog actually is solely for that purpose, inspiring and enabling other families with extra needs to be able to get out and explore. Then we also have Instagram, which has kind of morphed into more raising disability awareness as we share our travels, because there's just a wider audience there. But that's been a gift too, because that's also improving accessibility in travel.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show again and sharing your family's experiences. I really hope that families that are dealing with this, maybe they're new to the situation, I just hope they won't feel overwhelmed and that there are more people like you that are advocating on their behalf. So thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, and I'll have to give a quick plug for people like you who help in planning travel too, because that can go a long way if you know what you're looking for, that you can ask somebody else to step in and help as well. So that's always a great resource.
No, thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
If you're wanting to plan your next family vacation, call my dad. He would love to help you. As a certified travel agent, he never charges a fee to help you plan your vacation. Email him at rjones@starstufftravel.com and get started planning your family vacation today.
Well, that does it for this week's show. Join us each and every week by hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to The Family Vacationer. Make sure and subscribe to hear more of Rob and Danny.